Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. We have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star in studio now. Jesse, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys.
It's always a cooling off period after the previous hour, so we're all catching our breath. So we briefly discussed Rashee Rice with Sherman Dieter, and so we'll bring that up with you since new information came out last night about the charges. Just curious what your reaction to that is, and just where we are now with this story.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing we always start with is not a lawyer. I do talk to some of them, but not a lawyer, so we'll start with the caveat there. I don't think the charges are what you want if you're Rashee Rice. Obviously, eight counts looks bad. Two felonies is not good. Aggravated assault, I think, was a little bit of a surprise on there, maybe a little bit aggressive based off of what some people thought it might be in there. There are some potential positives there that so far with the charges you didn't see some of the things that were rumored to be, whether it was, you know, drugs or guns or even walking away from the scene, was not part of those. I still think that the problem here is that when we write these things, we go to the laws and see what a second degree felony is, and we say this is what it normally would be if you're found guilty. And I still think we're at a point here where none of that stuff is likely to ever – this is not likely to go to trial. This is likely to be pled down before it happens, because for Rashee Rice and for even the district attorney's office, I mean, there's a lot of motivation here to move on with this thing and not make it a very public thing where both sides would have a lot at stake in a trial to either be found guilty or to be found not guilty. So, I don't think it was a good day for Rashee Rice, but I don't think that this changes much about the calculation, at least at this point, where I think this thing is headed is. Most likely he's going to, you know, turn himself over today. He'll be out quickly on bond, and then they'll work behind the scenes to plead this thing down probably to some misdemeanors. And if that's the case, he's still likely to not serve any jail time. And then from there, the NFL personal conduct policy, we know in the past, has usually taken a stand in measures like this. So from there, we're sort of conjecturing, guessing on what that might be, and probably still looking, if we're guessing, like we did last week, in the 4-8 game range for him. So, like I said, I don't think it was a good day for Rashee Rice, but I do not buy some of the other takes out there that this is putting him, you know, in jail, or that this is a much different change in what would have normally happened. It seems to me like these two sides are going to come to an agreement at some point, and most likely that's going to end up with Rashee Rice not serving jail time.
So do you think... We've asked this every week. Do you think this changes the Chiefs' way of thinking right now as far as their decision to pursue one of the remaining free agent wide receivers out on the market?
I don't know. I mean, to me, the first part now would be the draft. And it's almost like one of those Donovan Smith situations last year where the Chiefs didn't know. Like, you don't know what you don't know yet. Like, they don't know. Maybe every great tackle doesn't get taken, and the amazing tackle, left tackle of your future, falls to you at 32. And then you take that guy. If that's the case, then maybe if there's somebody left in free agency after that, you maneuver some and get some wiggle room and figure out a guy to get because you didn't take the receiver at the top. More likely than not, the Chiefs are going to look at this draft, and it's very deep in receiver, and we know that they don't like to take a draft pick for need because usually that puts you in a bad spot, but there's going to be a lot of receivers there, and if they like a lot of them, most likely one of those is going to fall at 32 to you, and you have a potential to get that guy going and have him fill in for what still could just be a short-term measure for Rashee Rice being out. So I think if I'm the Chiefs, I sort of wait until the draft plays out to see – where things stand. And if you need to fill in gaps after that, I would wait. But again, this all goes back to the same thing we always talk about, which is the salary cap situation. And if you are planning on extending some of your players, which it seems like the Chiefs are, guys like Creed Humphrey, potentially Nick Bolton this offseason, you still need, you know, room in the budget to be able to do that. And so I don't know that they have just a ton of money to be able to go out and make that splash that she would really want. And even then, I mean, we're talking about 4 to 6 to 8 games potentially still at this point, if you're looking at this from kind of an objective place. And the Chiefs went last year for, what, 6 games without Charles Omenihu? And, you know, they've done this in the past and made things work in other places. And last time I checked DraftKings, they're still the favorites to win the Super Bowl. So they have a way of getting these things done. I don't think it should be a panic measure for the Chiefs, but if it does break a tie in the draft to say, hey, offensive line or receiver, what do you need at this point? Potentially that tie is broken. And you brought this up, Steve, which is a good point last week, which is how much now can the Chiefs trust Rashee Rice to be a long-term answer? I mean, when you're looking at the draft, you're not just looking at this year or the first 4 games. You're looking at who can replace Travis Kelce's production. And I think a lot of us a few weeks ago would have said Rashee Rice is a major part of that. Now, are they as likely to give him a long-term deal, to trust him with that sort of thing that they would do with other guys? Because when you do that, it's a long-term investment. So maybe now they're more in the boat of it's time to not only find a guy for this year, but it's time to potentially find a guy in case Rashee Rice is not a long-term answer for this offense, which maybe that's not as much the case as it would have been a couple weeks ago.
I feel like the answer to that question they need time. I feel like there's a possibility that Rashee Rice becomes the kind of player that they want even more long-term because of what happened, depending on how he reacts to all this. We've seen players make big mistakes early in their career, and not learn from them. and down the road, you realize that's just a person that's got a decision-making problem.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen other guys have a traumatic event like this, a big moment that woke them up and gave them a different perspective and a different sense of purpose and determination and responsibility. And you won't know that for a while, right? It's going to take a while to know what Rashee Rice is after this. So the idea of drafting, at least putting my head in the, I'm trying to get in the mind space of an Andy Reid right now, but it seems like that's kind of his approach a lot of times with guys that have made mistakes. He seems to want to give them chances and see how they do. So I don't know, like in terms of do I draft somebody because all of a sudden I don't think Rashee Rice is a part of this going forward? Maybe they know more about him than I do too, though. Maybe there's 3 things that have happened that we don't know about, you know, that they're like, you know, this is clearly, you know, an issue going forward. Does that, I don't know. I wonder how they evaluate that.
Yeah, you have to go back in time too to see who they have given extensions to. And we know for a while they did commit to Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. So there were situations going on with that. To a lesser extent, I mean, this was sort of more on the field stuff, but Travis Kelce was not always a choir boy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there was always.
He didn't
do
something this stupid, but he did a lot of goofy things.
Yeah, like, there was always the wonder, like, what's going to turn up next for him, that sort of thing. He has matured over time. So, and to your other point, Nate, like, we've talked about this when the Chiefs got Hollywood Brown on such a discount, which I was pretty shocked by, but they're just not really good receivers that go to free agency. Everybody locks them up because they're so freaking valuable. You know what I mean? And so if Rashee Rice turns into the player we think he turns into, and again, takes the responsibility we think he's going to take, the Chiefs are going to be incentivized to lock him up long term because it's hard. It's hard to get those guys in free agency because they just don't leave their teams. Those teams say, hey, you are too valuable. Here's a deal. Do not leave. And so I don't know. All I know is that, you know, this is different than it was a few weeks ago. A few weeks ago, I asked you guys, I said, what would Rashee Rice go for in the free agent market? And he would have gone for bonkers money.
Yeah.
This changes that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you want to lock a guy up long term where you're not sure about what is coming next? And we don't know what's coming next, but like you said, Nate, within 2, 3, 4 years, potentially we do know what's coming next or have a better indication. And so that left me something that Chiefs pay attention to.
It's everyone deserves a second chance, unless what happens is so awful that you don't get one, like Henry Ruggs. That was god-awful, a horrible tragedy. And that's why he's in jail. But the thing about second chances is that's it then. You know, do that again, and maybe you're not getting a third chance. And so this is a crossroads in his career very early. You know, this was bad enough where you get that laundry list of charges, right? This just isn't something that, you know, people, you know, guys will be guys, young guy just made a mistake. This is more, right? There's a lot of charges that raise your eyebrows and things we don't know. Like, do you really know exactly how bad everyone was hurt, exactly what the injuries were? And
no, there's those reports out of Dallas and not the Dallas News, but WFAA that keep checking in with one of the lawyers. But again, the lawyers of the people involved. But that has to be a part of this, because to get a charge, a felony charge, third degree of serious bodily injury.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, there's, because we keep hearing like, oh, nobody was seriously injured. Well,
two people were hospitalized.
Yeah,
right?
We've seen reports of a woman that had to have surgery on her eyelid that has been on bed rest. So potentially to get these charges, or to at least even charge him with this, they had to have seen something, or there's been some developments there that we don't know about. And to your point, Stephen, Rasheed's lawyer even admitted to this. You know, he said, this could have been worse if not for the grace of God, I think was basically the words he said. I mean, this wasn't – Rasheed Rice made a bad decision, but, like, the decision between people staying alive and people dying with his bad decision was luck. It was good luck. I mean, it wasn't he turned his car on purpose 1/4 of an inch of the steering wheel to the left or the right because he knew it would spare people. He got lucky. Now, that's the way the law works. That's the way our lives work. You know what I mean? Sometimes you're lucky, and he got lucky in this instance. So, yeah, it'll be on him to show that this sort of stuff is behind him in the future. But, it's a little more serious than, like, as you said, boys being boys. I mean, this thing could have turned a lot worse. It could have been the Henry Ruggs type of situation. Even Rasheed Rice's lawyer admitted it could have been a lot worse. He got lucky, so now it's time for him to take advantage of that and turn things around.
Yeah, I mean, like, to me, it's the kind of thing where if I'm watching him, I want to see, like, you got to be a different person. This should be the kind of thing that shakes you up so much that, not just I'm not going to rent a Lamborghini and drag race it anymore, but I'm changing a lot of things about the way I go about my life, you know. And people do that sometimes, you know. Sometimes somebody has something happen that's so dramatic in their life that it changes their whole perspective, you know, on how they do things. And I just we don't know what those answers are going to be. And like you said, we won't know for a while. So
I think the positive here, and I'm not sure it was his best legal action, but the lawyer coming out and admitting that Rasheed was the driver, and Rasheed coming out on social media and accepting responsibility for his part in this, you know, I've been told by lawyers, as far as like a criminal lawyer, that's not your best option.
Right.
Because it was going to be very hard for prosecutors to put him in the driver's seat unless there's evidence out there that we don't know about, which could be the case as well. But again, for him to do that and for his lawyer to do that, it seems to me like they want to make this thing go away as quickly as possible, and they want to do their part to just move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Accept responsibility, don't drag this thing out, and move on. And so that is it's an interesting strategy. Again, I've had lawyers tell me that's an interesting thing for him to do, because criminally, it might not have been his best option, and potentially it gave away some leverage, because when you're trying to plead down deals, if the prosecutor knows that they got you, if they know that you're going to admit to this, they say, well, that's very noble of you. Thank you very much, though. That's something that helps out the prosecution's case. So, again, I don't know if these charges were different because he admitted he was the driver in the situation, but if we're just talking from an NFL standpoint, from a Roger Goodell standpoint, from a Chiefs standpoint, obviously owning up to it and saying you were the driver and trying to move on from this thing, that's a good first step, even if potentially it wasn't your best first step legally. It was probably the best one to try to get this thing behind you.
All right, let's stay on the topic of wide receivers. We'll see him get all fired up now.
There we go.
What do you think of the social media footage of Kadarius Toney down in Texas working out with Patrick Mahomes and other receivers?
Well, he should be there, right?
Boy, Jake really liked it. That was a belly laugh from Jake.
There's nothing wrong with that, right?
No, there's nothing wrong with it. But unless you're a guy who's said that you don't see any way why or how they should keep him on the team.
Oh, I never said that.
No,
I never said that.
Nathan.
I'm aware of the fact that he's apparently going to be back. I just was baffled when I was first told that.
But that was just one. When were you told that?
Matt Derrick a couple weeks ago.
No, but that was just speculation. Like, hey,
yeah,
they haven't done anything yet. He's still there.
Yeah.
And now with the new kickoff rules, that gives him, that's actually a role now that fits him. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But now. He's down there with Mahomes, and you know.
But I mean, guys, if you're Kadarius Toney, why wouldn't you do this, right?
Because you're Kadarius Toney,
right?
But he's worked out with him before.
I mean, I like, you know.
Yeah, I don't
think he's always on the cusp of making the correct decisions. I mean, why would you on Super Bowl Sunday? Why would you?
Let me appease Nate here a little bit, okay? If you're the Chiefs, Kadarius Toney is an asset, okay. It's like a stock, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. You have him very, very cheap, okay? He's still on his rookie deal. Right now is the lowest, absolute lowest his value will ever be, ever, right? There's no point at this point, now that you've made it, again, you could have made an argument, cut him before the Super Bowl, he's being a distraction, all those sorts of things. Now that you've made it through there, and you still have him under contract, and he's cheap, there's... Why wouldn't he work out with Mahomes? Why wouldn't he be on the roster? Why wouldn't you try to, if nothing else, improve his value, improve his stock, and see if somebody else wants to make a run at him? Now, I go, that sounds far-fetched, but far-fetched things have happened in these moments where we think a guy has no value. Listen, Sky Moore was down there too, right? Working out with Mahomes? I mean,
yeah.
As he should. I left Nate speechless.
Come on. Oh, don't just sit there. Come on now.
I'm good.
We're talking about a guy who, my impression is, was injured, in air quotes, at the end of the year. Being injured, meaning the Chiefs were telling him he was injured, and he was basically just told, like, we don't want you on the roster right now.
I'm good.
That's kind of what he's indicated on his social media posts.
Mm-hmm.
That's all accurate, right? I didn't say any of that out of bounds, did I, from a factual standpoint? So the idea, like, if we didn't want him around in the most important part of the season, why do we want him around now or next year?
I think, so the majors, what happened?
When I use we, I'm using the universal we.
Steven's loving this.
You know. But also, I do think it's funny now. Steven's, I can laugh about this because it what. All season long, it wasn't funny because I thought it was going to cost him eventually, maybe a trip to the Super Bowl. But that game that they lost against the Lions, I can laugh about it. That was the worst game I have ever seen from a wide receiver. Or that's the most negative impact I've ever seen a wide receiver have on a game.
Remember the Patriots game? I mean, they were just coasting, and then he just chucked it to the Patriots.
But take
a touchdown.
Like if you legitimately say if he just didn't suit up, the Chiefs beat the Lions.
I mean, that's the thing is, like, it seemed like
it was amazing.
Yeah, they finally decided when we put you on the field, bad things are far more likely to happen than good things. And I would say that you're a stats guy. The stats back that up. Like, if there's ever a person where a stats person ought to look at it and go, what are you all talking about? Like, because a lot of times I'm on the side of the eye test and what people say. If there's a time where I'm not on the side of the eye test, it's all the people that keep saying, well, you know, that guy could change. You just got to get the ball in his hands. He'll make a play. Even if you just hand it off to him. Well, he averaged 2 yards a carry.
But you know I am now, just because I desperately want him on the team.
I need to be on board.
I need him on this team.
I'm going to talk myself into crap that I got to.
How much of this discussion is different than what we were talking about with MVS before the playoffs?
MVS didn't crush. No, it's different. It's different. People did say they don't want MVS on the team. I remember that when he kind of showed up Mahomes.
We had a discussion here. Who would you rather throw deep to do in the playoffs, MVS or McColl? And I think to a person, it was McColl was the answer, which to your guys' credit, in the Miami game, they used McColl.
In the Super Bowl.
And the Super Bowl, they used McColl.
They both paid off.
Still, right. Obviously, they had to.
Again, the correct answer was both.
My
Nobody suggested Tony. Can I offer up Kadarius Tony? Like, nobody said that.
The Patriots game.
Because he's hurt.
It's also the social media post, right? That's the other straw that's stirring this drink.
The NFL is, like, in baseball, this is like if a guy got the yips, right? You send him down to Double-A, you let him work back up. The NFL has nothing. They can't do that. So what do you do if you're the Chiefs?
You're hurt,
right?
You got to hit
me. I mean, listen, we're doing the most simple solution here, right? Once he threw the ball to the Patriots, it was over for him that year. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't have talent. It doesn't mean he can't.
And it's just over for him that year.
It was over for him that year. And they were not going to, just to your point, Nate, they were not going to put him out there with Mahomes. You saw Mahomes on the sideline after that. He was done with him. He was done for him. Now, can him going to the workouts in the offseason change things? Maybe you have additional time here, and he's under contract, and he's an asset. And the Chiefs do so well with, they don't just toss away assets. They don't. Like, I don't know how many times, how many times we have the Clyde Edwards-Helaire discussion. Why is he still on the team? What's he doing around here? Why don't they just cut him? And he was a good third running back for the Chiefs last year. They re-signed him. He's a good locker room guy. I mean, like, they utilized that asset for what it was worth. Was it the first rounder they envisioned? No. But he was useful for them. And we go back to that Patriots game. He was one of the reasons they won that Patriots game, is because they needed him to step up. He helped the offense get going, and the offense got going at a better clip once he was in there for the rest of the season. So I just think this is, you take the emotion out of it, and the Chiefs, with Kadarius Toney, it was a pitcher who had the yips, and they sent him down to Double-A, but there's no Double-A. So they said, you're hurt, buddy. You're out until the season. You're still under contract, and you're going to be here another year.
Numbers here.
So he's going to make the roster, you think, the 53-man roster to start the season?
As of now, yes.
Okay, so who's on it for sure? Hollywood Brown.
Yeah.
Justin Watson.
Yeah.
Oh, he's on it.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Toe will make heads roll if he ain't on it.
Sky Moore.
Yes. Rashee Rice. He's
on it, but if he gets, we don't know if he gets.
I mean, you got to put whatever draft pick they take in the first two rounds.
Okay, draft pick. Who else?
Who we're missing?
Justin Ross.
I mean, he was on practice squad most of the year. You could put another drafted player if you want. I mean, they might take two receivers.
I'd like to put a free agent. Another free agent that I want. That's what I would like.
Wait, which one is this one?
I'll ask you, of the three, who's most likely if they were going to sign one?
The cheapest.
Go ahead. Tyler Boyd, DJ Chark, or Odell Beckham Jr.? Or someone else? McCole Hardman.
That's the answer. That's the one I was trying to think of that isn't on this list. I mean, listen, McCole Hardman is probably the answer to, like, if you're worried about Rashee, who do you bring back? And is relatively cheap and would consider
coming back. I want McCole Hardman back. Yeah. He told me he wants to come back.
Yeah, I mean, if you're worried the first 6 weeks or whatever, and hey, that's I just think the Chiefs, when it happened with Snead and they traded him, I mean, it became very evident that this wasn't the perfect offer for them, but they needed that salary cap space because they have plans for that money and they want to extend some of these guys. And so I just don't think that formula changes based off of what's happened with Shea Rice. I just don't think that they throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's never been what they've done. They've always worked a year in advance, stayed very measured, not forced their hand on anything. And I just don't see that happening now. And again, look how many guys they brought back from last year's team. Bringing back McCole Hardman, that definitely could be something they do. You got a big smile, Steve.
No, I'm just...
You're loving it.
I'm just thinking about Nate. Okay, here we go. Here's my... I knew there was someone, a dark horse.
Okay.
Nico Remigio.
Okay.
Return guy.
He was a training camp darling last year.
He was training camp. Yeah, he was kind of one of those, like, hey, he'll make the practice squad, maybe get called up, all those things. Okay. Yeah, he's got a chance. I mean, they liked him last year.
But like with the kickoff rules, with you know, with the kickoff return actually mattering now, that's
we've got a lot of those guys we're talking about, like with the kickoff rules. You know, who all is going to potentially help them?
Something. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. Well, the Twitter account of O.J. Simpson has just tweeted that on April 10th, our father, Orenthal James Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer. He was surrounded by his children and grandchildren. During this time of transition, his family asks that you please respect their wishes for privacy and grace. The Simpson family, and now TMZ, is reporting that O.J. Simpson is dead at 76 years old. So, we're going to turn Jake's mic off and move on without comment, unless you have one, Nate.
No, I do not.
Or Jesse.
Are you going to disable my buttons?
Yeah, yes, I'd like to.
Okay.
We all know what he's known for,
right?
But that was one of those moments growing up. You
2,000
know,
2,000 yards.
Yeah, no.
He's rolling the naked gun.
The white Ford Bronco rolling down the highway with all the cops behind him. That was one of those.
Everyone remember where they were?
I remember exactly where I was in my living room, you know.
I was in Worlds of Fun all day.
It is. It's crazy. It's one of those moments you remember exactly where you were.
At my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
I was had some friends over. We were watching the NBA Finals.
I think it was
Rockets Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, we weren't interested in the NBA.
That's crazy. See?
Everybody.
Everybody remembers exactly where they were that day.
Oh, that thing was a phenomenon. I remember where I was when the verdict came out, too.
And my music teacher played in our grade school class and told us she was not going to comment on it, but just wanted to hear the verdict. So she stopped our music class in grade school, and we listened to the verdict.
I remember where I was when I saw The Naked Gun. I was in the movie theater.
What? So was I. Yeah. Man, the coincidence of that.
That was the day the 94 World Cup kicked off, going into my freshman year in high school. I think the first game of the World Cup was that day.
Wow.
Now the World Cup's coming back around.
You'd have thought Nate would have said that.
Well, he wasn't a soccer fan back then.
I did watch that World Cup.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was playing soccer.
Wow.
I didn't know as much about it as you, for sure.
Oh.
Well.
I was a Comets fan.
Another jab.
Did you watch much of the 94 World Cup?
Oh, yeah. I watched a lot of that, but I didn't watch.
Not the first game.
I don't remember
the NBA Finals.
There's a little something going on here, you know.
I'm glad there's a glass wall between them right now.
what's going on?
I was definitely
right
not as big of a soccer fan as Jake at that time. I did not become a diehard soccer fan until 2006. That's all fair.
I think it's because you've painted a portrait that Jake doesn't know about soccer, and you know way more about soccer than this. I think that's why he's touchy about this.
Do I do that?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I clearly know a lot more about it than
him
now.
You talk down to me.
Right. You talk down to him.
Yeah.
Right.
Very
talk, which is hard to do when I'm about a foot shorter than
him.
But
why don't you come out to Tequila Harry's
just
today?
Just because I score goals on him all the time back when we used to play.
I'd be at Tequila Harry's today from 11 to 1.
It's a team game.
Jesse, if you want to stop by.
I might need it after this. I don't know.
Have some special house margaritas
for you.
Wear your team colors.
I'll be out there.
Oh, boy. I'm gonna have to close Twitter now.
Yeah, close Twitter.
O.J. Simpson is taking over the Twitter feed now. Lots of.
I'm sure it's all nice.
Yeah, no, it's not. Nope, it is not. No, that's why I just
Twitter's usually such a.
I've just turned the iPad off.
Yeah.
And I must focus now. So, if it's not a wide receiver, is there another free agent that will be signed before the draft, or do we have to wait till after the draft?
I think you wait till after the draft now. Obviously, we don't know, but we figure Donovan Smith is the one that's
just waiting patiently.
Keeps getting brought up, you know, or some other left tackle out there, just depending on what the Chiefs do and how they fare and who they potentially get. So that seems, and I mean, we joke about this, but like, is there anybody on the defense that's a free agent that hasn't been re-signed with the Chiefs?
Willie Gay.
I mean, that's the only one. I mean, do they have any other free
agents? Mike Edwards.
And he signed with the Bills, so like, there's none of those left. But they have not signed a defensive player from a different team in free agency.
I was very happy that they brought back Mike Dana. I still think he's underrated, and I think it was I think it was money well spent for them. And we talk about it's not just production and stats; it's how a guy fits into that system and fits on that team. And he's just a fantastic fit for Spags defense and a tremendous fit in the locker room and a tremendous fit for when no one else wants to talk after a tough loss. A tremendous fit, Jesse. Justin Reed and Mike Dana are tremendous, wonderful young men who will speak at all times, and we thank you.
Tremendous beat writer fits,
right,
for sure.
Isn't that right? Isn't that your guy? I mean, that's, if you're going to come up with a perfect Jesse Newell player, it's Mike Dana. And you guess what? He's always with a smile on his face, and will actually, you can tell he's actually listening to your question and attempting to give you a real thoughtful answer. Much appreciated.
Yeah, we saw the Chiefs video that they put on social media where they talked about they went around and asked guys who the most underrated player, the most unsung player was on the team, and almost to a man on defense, they all said Mike Dana.
Everyone loves him.
And yeah, it's we always heard too, back in the day, you know, Eric Hosmer was the guy for the Royals. Like, win or lose, you go to his locker, he'll give you the professional answer, he'll be there.
And the
we heard Mike Dana on the call yesterday say, I enjoy going to work every day. I enjoy being around this. It kind of reminded me of the whole saying, you know, why mess with happy sort of thing. It's kind of seemed like where he got to. It also seems like this thing was kind of just waiting on Snead. You know what I mean? Like, they needed the money. They said, hey, well, just be patient. Don't go crazy. And if this Snead thing happens, which probably it eventually will, then that money will get cleared up and you can come back. But he seems like a good fit with the Chiefs, and obviously they utilize his skills well, where they move him inside and outside and do all different things. And maybe potentially a little bit of a narrative on what they feel about Felix Anudike Uzomah and his development, just to, you know, bring a guy like that back and have more security with Chris Jones. But hopefully Felix can kind of jump more in the mix as a, you know, true standard pass rush guy on pass rush downs this next year and contribute more than he did a year ago.
And two quotes that I loved. When asked about re-signing with the Chiefs, he said, I'm a hard worker. That's all I want to be known for. And then they asked him what he was looking for and what he was important for him in free agency.
Three words.
I prioritize winning.
That's a pretty good quote.
Love that guy. So his sack totals have gone up every single year he's been in the league. 6.5 this past year. What's his ceiling? Like, is that about the most of what we expect? Do we think that's, I mean, because I think we'd probably be happy with that if he posted around 6.5 sacks in his production. But is he capable of continuing to ascend?
Potentially. He's still just 26. The other part about this is most of his production, if you look at it, sacks-wise, came early in the year. But we know what happened early in the year, which was Charles Omenihu wasn't in there.
Yeah.
And so that potentially also could be where you're talking about, is there more production form out there, which is just as you increase playing time, as you take on more of a role and can stay in there, that could be out there. But
is he capable of being a 9-sack guy? If he gets enough playing time?
Man, sometimes with sacks, so much luck's involved.
Yeah,
you know,
opportunity.
What I mean? Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that, too. It's like there's other things besides that, but, yeah, you know, 6.5. He set basically career marks across the board last year and still is just 26.
Well, his numbers have just gotten better every year.
Yeah,
he's just played a little bit more. He's just had more production.
Absolutely.
I do think it's going to be interesting. This is a little bit of a tangent, but you know, Jake and I had a little back and forth when I said I didn't know that I can really consider the Chiefs' pass rush to be elite last year, even though their sack numbers were great. I, Pro Football Focus or whatever, might be able to tell you the more accurate answer to this, but I feel like a lot of the Chiefs' sacks come from coverage, from the fact that the quarterback has to hold on to the ball a little bit longer, even if it's 1 second longer. And I wonder if that'll change at all with Snead gone. I mean, obviously, we know they have other good corners that play physical and everything, but Snead could disrupt the timing of so many routes because he could jam guys at the line of scrimmage so well. I don't know. I wonder if that will take a drop at all.
I mean, they're good at two other things, too, obviously, which is they utilize Chris Jones really well and creatively, and he gets a lot of double
like
teams.
Crazy.
And then that's the other part is that Steve Spagnuolo just loves those cornerback blitzes off the side where, you know, you fake coming, bringing guys from one direction, you drop like a George Karloftis into coverage, and then you're bringing somebody scot-free off the other side. So
I don't feel like a lot of their sacks were the quarterback patting the ball and then the guys just finally getting to him. Sure, they had some, but it seemed like most of them.
And how much does the pass rush help the secondary?
A lot.
Yeah, but
Chris Jones blows up plays, baby.
Yeah, Chris Jones is like the one guy I think of on that defensive front that actually just gets right into the backfield. But maybe, but yeah,
I agree. Look at his games and sacks. Man.
I agree with Nate's point. What do you think? I mean, were they probably like second in sacks last year in the NFL? I don't think they're that good, but I think they have a really good confluence of things coming together, which is Spags, Chris Jones taking attention, George Karloftis is capable but taking advantage of one-on-one matchups because of what's set for him, and then a couple guys like Trent McDuffie and LeJarius Sneed being great coming off the edge, and maybe a guy like Shamari Conner will show more flashes of that this year with LeJarius Sneed no longer on the roster.
And to be, I don't remember a ton of coverage sacks where a guy's just standing back there forever and he can't find anywhere to throw it. I'm talking more like just disrupting the timing where, you know, in a lot of offenses these days, by the time the quarterback hits his back foot on his drop, the ball's coming out. And if the guy has to drop back and the ball's not coming out and he just has to hold it for a half a second longer, I think Karloftis is a guy at the top of my list who is likely to get there.
Mm-hmm.
He might not be likely to get there boom, by just getting off the line of scrimmage and beating his man, but he's going to get there if you have to hold it for a half a second or a second longer. That's what I mean, so somewhere in between is all I'm saying.
He'll keep trying. He'll get there eventually.
A lot of second effort sacks from him, which is not, it's a compliment, but it works hand in hand.
And Minshew had seven sacks in 11 games.
Yeah, it's good. He had one, where didn't he have like a half sack for like five or six straight games during one stretch? He was pretty dominant for a while.
I mean, Karloftis, Chris Jones, and Minshew's pretty good pass rushers to start with. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. Only 3 minutes away from successfully finishing the show without Jake commenting on the passing of O.J. Simpson. So we've almost got to the finish line. Jesse, could you get us there? Anything you want to share with us? You working on anything? Can you just fill the airways so he doesn't say anything, please?
How about those Royals? Right?
Well, let's go! 8-4, looking for more with a sweep at Houston today. Brady Singer on the mound. Come on. You think they're for real?
It was good to see Pasquantino. I mean, snap out of whatever it was, like 1-for-19
right,
or whatever. But
he didn't have any ribbies until yesterday. Now he's got five.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, once you see him hidden, because he was kind of the one that was left that wasn't. But, guys, I don't know if you guys watched the game on Easter. When I watched that one and saw Garcia pop it out and Bobby Witt was hitting the gaps and Brady Singer looked confident, I was like, I haven't seen a team like this since probably 16. I mean, the fact that young hitters come together. Now, listen, their pitching depth is razor thin. Like, they got to hope that these guys all stay healthy and can continue to be productive out there. But this is a good look, man. I think this is a good team. I mean, like, by good, is it playoffs? I don't know. But I was looking at the Fangraph odds here, guys. Like, 30.5% to make the playoffs right now. They started the season.
The Fangraphs
not close to that.
It's got their win total up to 80 now.
I mean, that's
and if they track like that, then they're at least competitive all year. That would just be such a step in the right direction. Just to see them involved.
Oh, you know, but then I get
interesting baseball.
Then I get a taste of it
in September.
I mean, they get a taste for winning. Yeah. They don't win at all.
Before the season, it was 13%. In 12 games, it's up to 30.5. And like the Astros are a real team, guys. Like they demolished them last night.
Yep.
How about those Royals? I know. It's just like you're knocking on every piece of wood you got here.
I texted my dad and told him O.J. Simpson died, and that's his response.
Oh, no.
Not...
Only 20 seconds to go,
way
so
he
we can make it.
You want his response? I said, O.J. Simpson died, and my dad responded, "Who killed him?" Like,
it's me, O.J. Mahomes.
No.
Show over yet?
We didn't make it.
I know I told him no.
We didn't make it.
We were sitting right here when he said, "Should I play this?" And I said, "No. I know for a fact."
We didn't make
it. We all heard it.
We did not make it to
the
end of the
show. My dad had a great question.
We got close.
No, Dad, no. Goodbye.